Right now, it is time to bring in Tim Luke and Greg Schramm, the appraisal guys, the frickin' frack of Nick and Knack with Appraise This. And we say good morning to South Florida. Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Where's Greg?
Good morning. Greg?
I don't see him. We don't hear him. Now, let's see if we can add him to the call here. This is always a crisis here, trying to add someone to a call. That's not right. I don't know. It's always so hard. You're still there, though.
Yeah. I'm here.
Because now all I have is a blank screen.
There. I had to restart. There. I had to restart.
All right. We've got him back. Hope you're feeling better this week.
Honestly, a little.
Okay.
I can't believe this is hanging on so long. I feel like my head's going to explode. I feel like that movie, that old movie where Ray Liotta played a guy that could explode your head. It's terrible.
There was a great streaming called The Boys, and there was one of the villains in it was a woman that could crush you so bad that your head would explode.
Well, that's kind of the way my head goes.
Literally explode. But anyways, enough of that. Okay. Well, the Monterey Classic Car Auction, $469 million.
Yeah. Did you get the email that I sent you on the Bonhams, one from Bonhams?
Yeah. It's amazing.
Oh, my God. That was also amazing.
Well, you look at this. Let's just say if it was $400 million, not $469, there were 800 cars. So you're looking at a pretty high average price per car.
Yeah.
I mean, a pretty high average price for car of $50,000, $60,000 leaves very little for the people that want to get in it. Like in some of the auctions, you'll find some things that you can purchase for $15,000, $16,000. But boy, more than 100 cars sold for $1 million or more.
I know that's 1-0 out of my league.
A 1955 Ferrari auctioned at Sotheby's for $22 million, and folks, feel bad for them. That was below the estimated value.
Right.
Is it me, or have you noticed that the car auctions in particular over the past 6 to 8 months, the prices just keep escalating? You just keep going. Each time it's like there's higher prices on similar vehicles in the previous sale, but it just seems like they keep getting higher and higher.
Well, I would
the one auction that I sent you from Bonhams. Did you see that? Did you look at any of those cars?
Yeah, I mean it's amazing when you look at some of the prices, and it's almost that if you are a car enthusiast and you know your cars, it's almost like the art auction market.
Yeah,
if you purchase a classic car that you've investigated, you know you hold on to it for 2, 3, 4, 5 years, you're going to make money.
Well, that's if you have the car to begin with, and you've had it since it was a bargain. Now it's not so much of a bargain. I mean, these cars, and the one question that I have is, I just wonder how many of them are in original condition and have, and how many of them have been totally restored. For me personally, if I had that kind of disposable cash, I really wouldn't mind if it was a restored. Like, for example, the one, there were a number of Mercedes in the Bonhams auction, and one caught my eye in particular, lot number 16, and I'd never seen a 1958 Mercedes before. It was spectacular, so I kept watching, and this is going to sound silly, but it only sold for I think it was $225,000. Now that's a lot of money, but there were cars in there, like you were saying, in the Sotheby's sale that were selling maybe a year or two ago for under $1 million, and now they were between $1 and $2 million. The same car. So there's something
at the in Monterey. The number 10 rank car, number 10 rank sell car, sold for over $6 million. That's number 10. That's number 10.
Right.
It is getting like art. You're right, though, Marshall. You were right. It seems like now it's these cars are now really becoming a commodity rather than a collectible. So, I mean, there was a time when people collected these for the sake of the love of you know, nostalgia and what they had growing up. Now they are like diamonds. I mean, they are a commodity. And when you and I think a lot of that might have to do with the TV auctions. People have gotten used to spending that kind of money just from watching the auctions. And when you see them scanning the audience, they're the crowd are just normal people like you and I. And you just wonder where is this disposable income coming from? But there's really that's I think with the advent of the car sales, the televised car sales, these big things, sales, and also I think over the past several years, the Monterey sale. Well, that's always kind of been like the big one for Sotheby's, and there are a lot of people from all over the world who participate in that. So, and then there's the Pebble Beach, and then you know these other ones now are popping up all over the place, and now like this last one here with Sotheby's and also Bonhams, the quality of the vehicles is amazing.
Yeah, it's just crazy to look at. I'm going to get serious now, and there's a great article on dinosaur skeletons. Paleontologists are now really speaking out loud. We've talked about this. Quote, they are thieves of our time. If an oligarch buys a dinosaur skeleton and puts it in the foyer of one of his mansions, it's effectively lost to science forever. This is a problem.
Well, we've talked about this in the past, about squirreling stuff away so that things that are, for lack of a better word, they belong to the world. I mean, history belongs to the world. And to have these really amazing relics of our past squirreled away in somebody's private home, I just think is unconscionable. And I just wish there was something they could do like NASA does, you know, where they can't sell certain things. But these things are, that's a shame. I mean, these discoveries are meant for the world. They're not meant to be hidden away just for some rich person to go sit in their living room and look at. That's my opinion.
A 77 million year old skeleton went for $6.1 million. If you have a skeleton of a 77 million year old dinosaur, it really should be in public view.
Yes, be in a museum. Yep. Yeah.
I mean, it's just. I mean, it's almost unconscionable. And I know you have a right to do and do what you want to do, but there's certain things that really are detrimental to society. And I think taking the planet's history, and making it a private thing is just crazy. Anyway.
Well, I think the caveat to that would be, I agree 100%, but I think a good compromise would be if somebody was buying this for their own. Okay, so they own it, but at least let it tour, let it be visible to the world, because it's part of our human history and history of the world. So I if you want to own it, great, but please I share. If you're an oligarch out there listening to me right now, please rethink it. You know, at least let people see it somehow. So that's my take on it.
We have, and you can comment on this. Our area is known for art collections and things like that. But a pretty historic art collection is headed and is going to be auctioned off in Hudson, New York.
Really?
Yeah. And I probably going to pronounce her name wrong. Joan Dionne's, Didion's art collection. It's going to be auctioned off in Hudson, New York. It's written up here as a pretty big story that the last time she had an auction was at Steer Galleries, and that's where she's having it again this time. It's very rare where you're going to see a major auction in a tiny little auction house tucked away in upstate New York.
Hmm. Well, when we lived in New York, there were a number of kind of hidden treasure auction houses that we ran across up in the Hudson Valley and up in that whole area. So I'm trying to think what some of their names were, but they were all, you know, they're kind of like flew under the radar. But I think this might be one of the larger collections to come up in a secondary level auction house for a while. So it'll be interesting to see what this does. I'm hoping there's going to be a lot of news on it because she's well enough, you know, she's known well enough that her name would draw attention. So if her art and her furniture and all of her the decor stuff sells, I think there'll be a lot of, if the publicity stays like this early on, by the time the sale gets here, I think it'll do well.
All right. Now, Tim, why don't you get an assignment like this? Sotheby's is having an auction coming up on August 28th in Singapore.
Now, yes.
That would seem to be, Singapore, though, seems to be like having an auction, maybe I'm wrong, in Hong Kong. It would seem to be a pretty unique place and good place to have an auction.
Well, it is. It's one of those places that there's more, they're looking at the demographics, and that's what they're looking at, is that, yes, they have a place in Hong Kong, but there are other cities in China, and you have to remember there's so many people in China, is that this is an area that there were a major growth, there's economic development, there's people moving there. So I think, you know, they're not doing they're definitely not doing a furniture sale, they're doing an art sale that's contemporary art, and they know the audience of what they need to bring there. But I think that they're looking to expand the offerings throughout the country, because, and I think all the stories that we've been talking about today, there's, especially the car auctions, is it's a destination. You go out to California, you go to Pebble Beach, you go to these certain locations where these things take place. But there's also the aspect of the internet, and there's hype around it. But there's something about being in a particular location. And I think that's what Sotheby's is tapping into, is that we're going to be in this location. You could still bid via the internet, phone, absentee bid, typical in what they do. But there is just something about a specific location. And I think that there's when things are sold, that is taken into consideration, as well as the reach and the marketing to let people really tap into, okay, what's being sold.
And well, you know, I also think it's they're hyping the fact that it might be a big success because it's the first sale they've had there in 15 years.
I was just going there, Greg. Yeah.
As good marketers as they are, they're going to hype the hell out of this to get people, register for this auction. And they haven't had an art sale like this for 15 years. So it's going to be, I think the hype is going to actually make the sale. Not to mention the fact that some of the pieces, I don't know if you've seen any of them, but they're kind of cool. I mean, there's some really beautiful stuff in there.
Oh, yeah. 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 So it'll be interesting. And I just think that it, and we've said it a lot, it's the first and the last of anything, really. That's what people go for. So it's the first time they're offering that there, you know, in 15 years. So it's a big hype. It's a whole generation later. So we'll see, you know, we'll see how it goes. If it goes well, I think you'll see Christie's also selling there.
Well, and that's the other thing, too. If you read the articles, they're also trying to, I think they're bolstering the staffs in Singapore, because they're hoping that if this does well, that it'll be something right. that will happen on more of a regular basis. And then, you know, it's like anything else. Somebody has to be the pioneer. And then after the pioneer, then all of the, you know, all of the sheep will follow. And it's going to be the same. I'm sure all of the major auction houses that have a presence in the East or in China or in Asia, they're all going to be heading the same way. I mean, you know, that's just business. So I think the next couple of years are going to be interesting to see what happens with these sales, these art sales. But because, you know, a lot of the when they do have these sales, a lot of the Asian customers and there are some Asian pieces in there. They this whole thing of repatriating a lot of Asian art. That's been going on for some time now. So, kind of under the radar, but if you look at where the sales are, what they're selling and who is buying, that's exactly what's happening, is a lot of these things will end up back in China.
Now imagine you're a child, you're given, a paint set and you paint something on your wall. You turn into a famous artist. Keith Haring is the artist. He drew a baby on his wall with some gold paint he was given. A homeowner was about to paint over the wall. Somebody found out that it was there. It's now going up for auction. Can you imagine that?
Well, let's use Banksy as an example. That's exactly what's happened with a lot of his things that were painted, that they, instead of destroying, what they did is they would deconstruct the wall brick by brick and put it back together and sell it.
Well, the people were smart before they did something. There's something in the back of their mind. They contacted the artist's father, who owned the home, and he said, yeah, not only was it authentic, but he also signed a letter of authenticity. And so there, that goes to what you always say, Tim, about provenance.
Right.
You've got the painting, it's on a wall, but you've got the letter, and there's also some other works that were in a closet of his bedroom that are going to be included. But that whole letter from the father makes the difference.
Yeah, that really does. Yeah, that just puts it into perspective and really gives it a stamp of approval, because that's one of the things we see a lot are just forgeries of, or in the style of, Keith Haring pieces that are out there. So it's good to have that kind of background and provenance, which really makes a difference when you're buying artwork.
It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting how they get this and sell it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. The question is, are they going to be able to get it? Well, I'm sure they are. The technology today is they can save things that are on walls and on paper. They'll have to figure out some way to, whether it's taking that section of the wall out.
That's what the painting itself is only about 5 to 7 inches wide. But they're going to take that whole section of the wall out.
Yeah.
That's like Banksy. I'm telling you, when we were Julian's, there were more than a handful of paintings there that were actually architecturally architectural canvases, basically, where they actually had that those particular pieces, and the same with some of the other artists, where the tiles, the subway tiles and things, where they would literally just remove them, and they all of a sudden became a gallery piece, and they would reconstruct that, and I have a feeling this is not going to be any different. This is going to be, and the fact that it. There's a great story behind it. Come on, let's be honest here. It's Keith Haring as a kid. I mean, where do you find stuff like this? I mean, it's really a rare piece. It's really going to be a one of a kind. So I think it's going to be cool. I think it'll be, I hope it really, really does well.
It's good that his parents didn't get upset and made him paint the wall over when he did.
Yeah, right. My mother would have. I would have had to paint the wall.
Well, after getting a whooping, I would have been. It reminds me in high school when I carved a number 71 into a lectern at the high school. I was talking about it was from high school. I thought it looked really nice, and it came out beautiful because I had taken woodworking, and it came out beautiful. Well, the school and the Board of Education didn't think it was so beautiful. So I had to totally fix it and bring it back to its original state.
Yes.
Wow.
I thought it looked kind of good myself, but nobody else agreed. So
the trials and tribulations of an artist.
And then I had to also clean off graffiti from the seats in the auditorium as a punishment. So it was...
So who knows? You might have erased a major work of art by doing that.
No, but I obviously got a lot of people upset, and I did feel bad. I did feel bad because after I saw it up there, I said, yeah, that 71 only means something. People right now in the class of 71 at the school. And it was rather short-sighted of me to do.
You were such a rebel. Such a rebel.
No, I would call it a klutz. rebel indicates some success. I was a klutz. I did things very, very, very klutzy. Like, well, all right. Well, we've gone from the highs to the lows here this morning. You guys got a busy week coming up?
Well, yes. We're in the throes of finally getting the house in order after a major leak. So I'm excited about having construction. So that's kind of what I'm project managing, if you will, this whole project. So even though I have announced, air quotes, my retirement, I'm still just as busy as ever. So I have plenty to do.
Yes, lots going on next week. I'll be in Naples, so probably be driving over to Naples. We have a number of estate appraisals, so we're just getting to the end of summer. So a lot of people, all of the things that they meant to do at the beginning of summer in June, they're finally getting around to saying, oh, we have to get this done.
Just FYI, it's Naples, Florida.
Yeah,
that's right. Naples, Florida. That's right.
Still, it's still Naples. It doesn't matter.
Okay. Exactly.
All right, guys. We'll speak to you next week. Have a great week.
Hey, have a great week.
Take care, guys. Tim, Luke, and Greg Schramm, the appraisal guys, the frickin' frack of Nick and Knack with Appraise This here on The Breakfast Club on Robinhood Radio. Of course, you can find them at tqag.com, and you can find them right here at Robinhood Radio's website, robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand, and click on... Appraise This.